You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Earth Station One. My name is Mike, and let me introduce my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy, and welcome to their second installment of the Countdown to Halloween.
You really excited about this one, I could tell.
I'm excited every one we do this month. I'm not that I'm not normally excited.
Yeah, I was going to say the other 11 months, you're just like,
But October is, you know, special. It's spooky. It's eerie. It's, you know, it's really cool. So it's really fun. And this one's going to be a fun one, I'm sure, because we got some great folks joining us all to talk about the groovy one himself, Ash Williams.
It's awesome. Ash has always been like one of those anti-heroes that you didn't expect and were very happy to get from it. And Bruce Campbell is just awesome anyway. And, you know, it's hard to think of him without, you know, thinking of Ash. And it's just pretty awesome. And for him to come back to the role was just groovy.
Yes. Yes, it was.
It's cool. So we definitely want to hear from everybody at home, you know, what your thoughts are on Ash Williams, because we're going to be talking about all the different movies, the TV show, and, you know, you never know what else could come up. You might even talk about the musical. Maybe.
So maybe. I have seen the musical, and I do endorse it. If you have a chance, I think it's playing in the Atlanta area now. So if you do get a chance to see it, I do recommend it.
Very cool. So definitely take a peek at that. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Of course, want to take a minute to thank everyone who has been donating to our Patreon. It's been great for, you know, everyone who's been doing it. And now since we've been opening our podcast recordings on Patreon to everybody, you can go to patreon.com/ESO Network and listen to the new episodes as they go live for 5 days for free. You don't even have to join Patreon. It's open to the public. And then after the fifth day, it goes behind the wall and is only available to Patreons. And you could become an ESO Network patron for as little as 25 cents a week. Not too shabby. And it helps support the station and helps keep the lights on and keeps us going with new topics and everything. So it's great, and we want to thank everybody. And for a little bit of a bonus, we actually just put live our ESO Network Dragon Con recording, which we do yearly. And, you know, it's great where all the hosts of all the different shows get together at the end of the con and just do our review, what we think about it. And we might have had a little bit of apple pie at the recording.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun, and you never know what will come out of our mouths with apple pie in it. So it's pretty actually a lot of interesting stuff that came out. So definitely know it's there for you, and it's available until, you know, like we said, for the first 5 days for free. And then after that, Patreon listeners, go to town. So definitely ESO Network Patreon is available at patreon.com/ESO Network. All right, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we find out what's on our minds. Mikey, what do you got?
Well, you know, usually I'm full of the Halloween spirit here and talking about all things spooky and what's going on. But I must say I had a conflicting thought when I was preparing for our panel on celebrating the 80 years of the Addams Family. I was watching some of the, you know, different versions of the Addams Family. And my favorite, of course, the one I grew up on, was the 60s series. And my God, Carolyn Jones was just so incredibly gorgeous in that. And for me at a young age, I definitely will tell you that, you know, I had a crush on her, maybe even more so than anybody else at that time in my life. I mean, she's just to me was so gorgeous. And I was wondering, and it got me thinking about, you know, actresses or, you know, celebrity crushes. Do you remember who your first celebrity crush was, Mike?
First celebrity crush. Oof. That's tough because different eras of growing up always had, you know, first celebrity crushes. I'm going to have to say pretty close to you, it was either, you know, of course, Morticia Adams or Lillian Mustard was always one of my favorites. Yvonne DiCarlo.
I recognize that Yvonne DiCarlo was gorgeous, but she was not my type. For whatever reason, I did not have the same sort of feelings for her that I did for Morticia Adams and for Carolyn Jones. And I think part of it is, I think, you know, and I don't want to get too much into the show because we're going to do that next week, but I think part of it was that the Adams family was a little bit more like romantic or kinky, not kinkier, but it was more like, cause you know, Gomez was always like on her, you know, like, and you know, so, and I liked Gomez so much that obviously the woman that he's attracted to is probably like a cool woman. So I got that impression as well. But a lot of those shows that I watched back then that were reruns of the 60s era, some of my favorites, Get Smart is one, Batman 66. Of course, we didn't call it 66 then. It was just Batman, Star Trek, and those shows from the 60s. I'm watching in the, you know, early 70s, and I'm starting to like, oh, hey, that, you know, Agent 99 is pretty cute. Hey, Batgirl is pretty cute.
Yvonne Craig was awesome.
Yes, she was very awesome.
Between her being Batgirl, but also on Star Trek.
Yes, of course, yeah, one of the Orion slave dancers, yes. Mm-hmm,
exactly. So, yeah, so those were a couple of mine, you know, a couple cartoons. You know, I was like, oh, she's really cute, you know, that type of thing. You know, always like...
Wait a minute, time out. So you had a crush on a cartoon before Jessica Rabbit?
Oh, God, yes. Couple of them.
Was it Wilma or Betty?
I'd have to say probably Betty. I've always been a thing for brunettes more than, you know, well, she was with Fred Flintstone. Yeah. But then, you know, like I said, different eras, different characters. You know, my first real like sci-fi crush, of course, was Sarah Jane Smith from Doctor Who. But we've talked about that in the past.
Yeah, Sarah Jane I had a crush on, and then Leela, who came right after her, I had a crush on in a different way.
She never did anything for me.
Oh, really?
No.
I got to meet her last year, or earlier this year, rather, at the Hulanta finally. I mean, that was a big deal. I am so fortunate, too, with this day and age of conventions, of getting to meet a lot of my, you know, early crushes. And look, I'm not meaning anything perverse by any of those crushes that we have. I mean, we all go through that stuff, I think, right, in some level. And so just getting to meet some of these women later in life, who many of which have gone on to be just, you know, incredible people, is just a phenomenal experience. Sometimes I look back and I'm like, you know, I've met Yvonne Craig. I've met, you know, Carrie Fisher. I've met Lucy Lawless. You know, it's just amazing to me that I get a chance to meet with them. Like some younger self, and I don't want to put Lucy like she's not that old, you know, at the time, like a lot of I would be like, what? I'm never going to meet those women. That's crazy. I'd love to, but that's just going to be impossible. And yet, you know, I've met a lot of them.
No, I totally understand that. And that's kind of cool, especially for what we're doing. We get the chance to meet the people we grew up with in a lot of ways. And it's some of the biggest thrills in the world. It's like, oh, I used to have a crush on you. And, you know, I would never do that. But you still have that restraining order against Eliza, but that's okay.
Well, that's, you know, that is what it is. And she's married now, so I think we've reconciled. Obviously, you know, when we were growing up too, speaking of 60s television and, you know, which one would you want? There was always the Gilligan's Island, you know, Marianne or Ginger debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was, you know, which one is it?
I think, and I've actually got a chance to meet Marianne, So that was cool. And I think I would have been on that side. But, you know, I think that when I was really young, because that's, you know, more my style, more my speed, was the Girl Next Door. But there's something to be said for the platinum, you know, diva as well, you know.
Oh, sure. You know, for me, it was Marianne because she was more realistic and more of a chance. But, you know, and I have met Dawn, and when I was out in Seattle, because she used to live out there, and she used to guest star on a couple of different local TV shows, and we sat in the audience for one of them, and she was greeting people after the show and everything, and I just said, thank you for a great childhood. And she said, what do you mean? She says, you were one of my babysitters growing up with Gilligan's Island. And she said, well, that was the best, you know, tell your mom and dad that, you know, they owe me like $45 for my babysitting fee. She was and she was right on it. And it was awesome because it was she guest starred on that show. And it was also Russell because he was also from out there.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. So I got to meet, got to meet the professor and Marianne.
Around that time period with the '60s, you also have Elizabeth Montgomery as in Bewitched. And, of course, from I Dream of Jeannie, Barbara Eden. And so, I mean, there was, and I'm, you know, and probably for me, the most iconic and, you know, awe-inspiring one of them all would have been Linda Carter as Wonder Woman. I think that to me was like probably the biggest crush I might have had, because that was just, I mean, I love the character of Wonder Woman. I've always been a DC guy. Love Wonder Woman and the Super Friends and reading her. I even was one of the guys, the boys that read Wonder Woman comics. Couldn't really tell my friends or, you know, wear Wonder Woman t-shirts or anything, but I did read Wonder Woman comics back in the day because I just liked the character so much. So, and to see her embodied in such a striking way by, you know, Linda Carter, I mean, there's a reason why it took so long for there to be another Wonder Woman depicted, because we were all trying to get over the fact that Linda Carter was Wonder Woman. So it was kind of like we, had, you know. I think Gal has done a great job taking that mantle, taking over for that role. But back in the day, I mean, there's still people who believe that, you know, that she's the only one that could play her.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's great seeing Linda Carter, you know, still keeping up and looking great. And, you know, I'm sure we'll, you know, get, you know, people writing us, oh, you guys are so misogynistic and, you know, talking about your crushes, blah, blah, blah. You know, hey, you know, sometimes it's fun to do. We want to hear from everybody. You know, this is our, you know, way of looking at things fun right now, because there's a lot of dark in the world right now. And you know what? Let's have a little fun with it. You know, everyone, male or female, they had crushes on different celebrities and growing up. So,
well, dude, I even had crushes on like guys, you know, like there was guys I looked up to and I was like, my God, that would be so cool to be that guy. Whether it was like Harrison Ford or Kurt Russell or, you know, or even oddly enough, John Astin. Like, I just took in for those guys. Those were like the guys that I was like, they are really cool dudes, you know? And, I would say that I would like have like, you know, the equivalent, like a man crush really on them.
Oh, sure. I always wanted John Astin to be my dad. He was like, and it didn't even have to be Gomez Adams. I just thought John Astin was just so cool.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever really felt like I wanted him to be my dad in that way, but I thought he was a cool dude in and of himself, you know, and that's, you know, obviously the guys who played Bond are high up there too. So it's weird for me to think that, you know, as we're talking about this stuff, they are somewhere in Atlanta this week and this, you know, over the course of the next few weeks, they're filming Doom Patrol, which means that Timothy Dalton is here in Atlanta. And that's a guy that I mean, I've watched since, obviously, you know, Flash Gordon, but his work before that with Lion in Winter. And then, of course, he goes on to be Bond. He goes on to be like, you know, isn't he Rassilon, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course he is.
And we have Gallifrey and his work on Penny Dreadful. And then all the other work he does, too, Hot Fuzz. I mean, he's a great actor. Like, in some ways, I know that a lot of filming gets done here and a lot of actors come to Atlanta to film stuff. But for some reason, when I think of Timothy Dalton here, that excites me more than anybody else.
No, it's interesting that you brought up Bond because, you know, a lot of my first, you know, celebrity crushes were also Bond girls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know,
Jane Seymour in Live and Let Die.
Yes.
Oh, she was great as Solitaire.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, then, you know, you also had, you know, I didn't care for Barbara Bach was okay in Spy Who Loved Me.
I loved Barbara Bach. Did I'm not going to lie. Okay. Yeah, I did.
You know we're showing our age so much on this show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. People are like, who? Like, yeah, some, yeah, I know. But, you know, I mean, that's the fun part of it. I mean, I think, yeah. And like you said, I mean, this, I mean, just no disrespect. This is not that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, I think, you know, crushes are to be, you know, in some ways encouraged and just to have fun with, not to think very serious about, but. Yeah, it's like anything else. If it goes too far, then yeah, that's wrong.
Oh, but, of course. And then, you know, I know we talked about it just a couple weeks ago, Smokey and the Bandit. I had a huge crush on Sally Fields from that movie.
Yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm. I could see that.
Mm-hmm. She was adorable.
Yes.
And it's like, so yeah, there was just different actresses, different, you know, as I got older, you know, Dukes of Hazzard, you know, you had Barbara Bach. You know, Daisy Duke.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, you just, all these different actresses and, you know, it just, it depended who, you know, what it was, what the show was or what the movie was, you know, a lot of people like Carrie Fisher from Star Wars.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's count me in on that.
Yeah. I liked her, but I didn't have a crush on her, but you know, so it just depended on the woman. So.
You mean, you know, it's because you weren't her brother, so.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't want to even get into the incense suit. Yeah, sorry.
So here, we'll end it with this. So if you had a chance right now, like we can program an upcoming ESO episode where we get a chance to have our celebrity crushes on the air, like who have you not met or who have you met that you... that you would say, like, that's the person that I want. And they can be already gone if, you know, because like in the case of Carolyn Jones, she's no longer with us. So that's unfortunate, but that would be cool.
I would have loved to have met Elizabeth Sladen.
Ah, you know what? I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that. I mean, I guess my pick was going to be Carolyn Jones, but I can't argue with that either because, yeah, she's... Elizabeth Sladen was a special kind of person.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And I'm really sorry that we never got a chance to meet her.
Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have gotten the chance to interview her, meet her, and just thank her for, you know, bringing like the first really true modern, you know, Doctor Who companion, not just, you know, someone who wasn't afraid to get dirty or, as Jennifer Hartshorne used to say on Doctor Who, a big dumb bag of hair.
Well, it's interesting for you to say that, too, because I know that your favorite companion is actually not a woman.
Nope. My favorite companion is a male. And,
right. And we've had the fortunate chance to meet him.
So. I met him twice. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, me and Mary Ogle made an ass of ourselves right in front of him.
You mean similar to me making an ass out of myself in front of Elijah Dushku?
No, not at all. Not even close. Not even close. Because, you know, we didn't, you know, we ran before, you know. So, yeah, no, Fraser Hines is my favorite male Doctor Who companion. His work as Jamie as with the Second Doctor was just fantastic. And he is just a hell of a nice guy. And we were fortunate enough to get to meet him at Con K one year. So it was pretty cool. And so, yeah, and, you know. you know, everyone just loves John Barrowman. So, you know, he's up there too. So it's okay.
Sure. Yeah. Well, he's on every, I think he just inserts himself on everybody's list. It's just a given that John Barrowman is on the list.
Of course. It's not even second.
You don't even
thought.
Have to list him because it's just the default, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You don't even have to think twice about it. Barrowman. Okay.
That's it. Well, very cool. I was just very interested in, like, you know, like I said, I was thinking about that, and I was like, man, I'm like, I just remember, like, it brought back a lot of memories of me watching it as a kid. And definitely one of the attractions of that show was, you know, and like I said, meant no disrespect. It's just, you know, different people have different tastes. So I'm always curious as to what, like, people like and what they don't like. And it's okay to, you know, obviously it's okay to like different things. And I just like to celebrate that on our show. So it's always interesting for me to find out, like, who, you know, people really cling to. And, you know, it's just one of those things that it's like, you know, some people, even in the case of the Addams Family, some, you know, like you brought up, like, some people really love Yvonne, you know, from Munsters. And some people love Caroline from Addams Family. And that's cool. I love that. You know, there are no right or wrong answers.
No, not at all. And that's what's great about it.
I mean, even if you like Cousin It, even if your celebrity crush was Cousin It, that's okay.
Very true. And, you know, I'll be completely honest. A lot of my celebrity crushes when I was younger also were musicians and stuff. Rock stars, people you saw on MTV, and, you know, things like that also.
And I don't mind also saying that I probably have a little bit of man crush on Bruce Campbell. I mean, we're going to talk about Ash in a little bit. And I think one of the things that's attracted me to Ash Williams and all things Evil Dead is the fact that Bruce Campbell is just a very cool dude. And it'll be fun. It's going to be fun to talk about him coming up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's funny because, you know, everyone has one. And, you know, I think for you, it's something with the chin. It has to be. And on that note, we definitely want to hear from you guys. Please write us. Bail us out of this one, please. Write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with The Geek Seat.
We're done. Give me some of that sweet chin music.
Boom.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I'm excited because one of my most anticipated movies for the fall is coming out this weekend, and it's called First Man. And it's the true story of Neil Armstrong, who is, of course, the first person to set foot on the moon. I've always had an interest in the Apollo space program and the history of that, even since I was a kid. So I'm really looking forward to this movie, seeing them dig into a little bit of the space program and how we got to the moon, and also hopefully a little bit of deeper information about who Neil Armstrong was as a person. This one's been getting good reviews so far, so I'm really looking forward to checking it out. We also have a movie called Bad Times at the El Royale, which I haven't heard a lot about personally, but it does star Jeff Bridges, John Hamm, and Chris Hemsworth, among others, so might be worth checking out just for that. It's about seven strangers who meet at a rundown hotel with, you guessed it, a dark past. And finally, since it's Halloween season, we've got another semi-scary movie, maybe not too scary, more of a kids and family movie, Goosebumps 2, Haunted. I actually didn't read the popular R.L. Stein franchise when I was a kid, so since I never really got into the books, this one doesn't have a lot of interest for me. Kind of based on some of the trailers and stuff I'm seeing, I don't know that this is going to be the best movie. You might be better suited to go find another Halloween movie. But you know what? I have been known to be wrong before. Like when I predicted that Venom was going to be a big flop, and then it actually did really well at the box office this past weekend. So what do I know? And on DVD this week, speaking of Halloween movies, there's Hotel Transylvania 3. And then we also have the Dwayne Johnson thriller Skyscraper. The trailers for that one didn't really hook me too much when I saw them this summer, but it is Dwayne Johnson, so this one might be a rental for me. And that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, I'm getting ready to start a blog series over at the ESO website called Better Late Than Never, and I'm planning to take a look at some famous, well-loved films that I haven't got around to seeing yet, some things that I'm a little embarrassed to admit I haven't seen yet, including a certain movie by Steven Spielberg with a big shark that I haven't ever seen, even though Steven Spielberg is my favorite film director. So really looking forward to diving into some of those movies, and hope you'll head on over to check that out.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we have a sneaking suspicion that you don't actually listen to these promos.
So we're not going to make you listen to one. Bye!
Brought to you by the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast where Joe and Tony watch all of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Available on the ESO Network or wherever else you get podcasts from.
But honestly, where else would you go?
WatchYourRassilon.com?
Oh yeah, that makes sense. As I find my way
home. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Earth Station One podcast. Now it's time for the Geek Seek segment, and we have two guests with us this week. Of course, Ryan Cadaver is returning back to the show, and he's brought his friend Nicole with him. Welcome back to Earth Station One, guys.
Hi.
How's it going? I'm here.
Hey, we can't imagine having an October show without you.
I know. I'm glad to be here for the spooky month. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is like a yearly thing, I think.
Yes, it should be. If it isn't officially, then it is now.
Hell yeah.
So, Ryan, again, welcome back to the station. And of course, the Casket Creatures are going to be very busy this month, I take it.
Oh, yeah. This is one of our busiest. It's definitely our busiest month of the year, typically. But this month in particular is busier than ever. We have a lot of stuff coming up, but
absolutely.
I'll save the plugs.
Yeah, sure. For the end of the show.
Yeah.
And for the links in the show notes, of course. But Nicole, this is your first time on Earth Station One. Welcome on board.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For those people who may not have been familiar with your, previous work, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I run a podcast with Nathan Hamilton, Son of Celluloid, called Caught Dead Watching, where we talk about some of the most interesting, best of the worst that the, movie fringe has to offer. So we talk about some deep cuts, but it's really fun. And other than that, I'm just a ridiculous horror nerd. It's kind of my hobby. So I kind of guest periodically when people like to talk about horror stuff.
Now, on your own podcast, I would imagine a lot of those are, spooky horror movies as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We mostly stick to horror, but we do sometimes branch out to bad action because I feel like they just go so well together.
Right. Now, is it so bad it's good, or it's no, this is just plain bad?
It's a little bit of both. Okay. And it also depends very much on where you're coming from. Because I think my so bad it's good might be different from other people's so bad it's good. I've got a passion for bad movies. I think I love them a lot more than most people do. So, we've done some movies like Suburban Sasquatch and Barn of the Blood Llama that most people probably wouldn't find so bad it's good, but I think that they are glorious. And then we've also done some that I really wanted to take out of the DVD player and throw out into the night sky and just set on fire. There's not enough bad things I could do to these movies. So it's a little bit of a mix of both. And every once in a while, Nathan and I will decide to watch one that neither one of us has seen or neither one of us has seen it in its entirety. And that usually goes awry.
It is an interesting topic, but you're right. It is completely subjective, I think, for the, what's good and what's bad is also always, subjective, but so bad it's good really does depend on the person.
Yeah, there's a magic that a bad movie can have that just kind of makes you fall in love with it anyways. A lot of it, I think, has to do with the heart that is behind it, where, you can see something that is kind of a piece of garbage, but you just can't help loving it because somebody loved it enough to create it and bring it into existence in the first place.
And there's those independent darlings, like we like to call them, that we covered it last week when we talked about Night of the Living Dead. That's probably one of the most successful ones. But later in the show, we're going to talk about, you know, Evil Dead series. And that started off as a very independent, you know, movie, which probably everybody thought this is going to be crap. And it turned out to have something special to it.
Absolutely. It was able to somehow capture that magic that is just, it's almost like if you try for that magic, you're not going to get it.
Right.
It just sort of has to happen. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Well, we're glad to have you with us to talk about Ash all later. But now we want to talk a little bit about this venture that you guys are part of, Theme Park Alchemy. Tell us a little bit about what that's about.
So it all started. We were coming back from Universal Studios, which, if anybody knows us, like, we go to theme parks a lot. We're theme park nerds. Like whenever we went to, like, we planned a trip to Paris, and, you know, most people are like, oh, the Louvre and all. And we saw all that stuff, of course, you know. But, like, I was like, but there's a Disneyland there. We should go there. You know, like, I'm obsessed. Like, it's the first thing I think of anywhere we go. So we were leaving Universal Studios, and we're talking about all the great, like, scents that you can only get there. And I was like, man, I wish that some of these, you know, you could actually, like, bring them home. And, like, there's, like, the E.T. ride. I don't know if you've ever ridden it, but it's got this, like, very unique smell. Some people say bad smell. I like it. But it's things like that. It's like, I wish I could have this at home. So we're trying to kind of create candles that they don't necessarily smell like the actual scent in the ride, because it's hard to get, like, musty old building mixed with, like, fake pine scent, you know. But, like, it's one of those things where these are very inspired by, like, the memories and stuff. And that's kind of the whole Theme Park Alchemy slogan, is conjuring up memories. So it's all, like, we have one that's inspired by the defunct Jaws ride and the defunct Kong ride. And we're going to do some other stuff, some kind of, like, Disney-inspired stuff. I have to use the word inspired. But that's kind of how it started. It was like, oh, it'd be cool to have these scents at home. And then we kind of looked at and did candle making. And Sean had actually gone to, flea market or something, or, like, something. And there's somebody selling candles, and kind of looked into it and was like, oh, this isn't that hard. And we were like, yeah. And, you know, so once we started, like, actually working with it and creating the scents, like, this stuff's really cool. And his girlfriend Jen does the artwork, and Nicole does all the hard work as far as, like, the man making the candles. I come up with fantastical ideas, and then I'm like, hey, make that happen. So it's really working good. And then Sean, of course, is, like, you know, multimedia and, like, social media and website and design and all that amazing stuff. So
he's our IT.
Yeah. Everything. So it's like, we kind of all found our own little place.
He's creating an app for you.
Oh, yes, yeah. He's exactly. Creating everything. Yeah.
A Smell-O-Vision app.
Yeah. So, if you look at our web store and stuff, like, it looks so professional. And Sean's like, yeah, I threw this together in a couple of minutes. How's it look? And we're like, oh my God, dude, that would have taken me a year, you know? Yeah. But yeah, he's just really good. So it's kind of cool. We all just kind of fell into place and found the stuff that we're good at. And we've all talked about, like, you know, one of our goals, like, all of us, it would be so cool to, like, do something related to the theme park industry. So this is, like, a cool little outlet for us. And it seems to be catching on. We've made some good sales. There's a guy writing a book about the Jaws ride at Universal that, you know, he used to work on the ride, and he has all these stories of stuff that happened on the ride and stuff. Really interesting stuff. And he actually, you know, he put the candle up on his website. He's like, oh, buy the Jaws ride candle and stuff. So it's kind of catching on. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see it grow out of just, like, a random idea.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's, you know, it's four creative people, and all of our talents lie in kind of a different corner. So we all complement each other really well. And it's a lot of fun.
It's also, I know it's a project of passion, though, because I know how much all four of you love theme parks and theme park rides and everything. So it, in that sense, it's perfect, and it's coming. Like, if you're going to be involved in something like this, especially extracurricular, you know, it's important that you love it. And I know absolutely nothing about what it takes to create a scent or candle or any sort of thing like that. So I can imagine that it's a a whole bunch of challenges, especially if you guys are you guys actually like hand making these literally like in your yes. like living room?
Well, we made like a little workshop, but yeah, it's all handmade. And the sensor, like we're not just buying like, you know, like 1 cent and dumping it into a batch of wax. Like we're actually crafting scents and mixing and trial and error and dipping, you know, like, you know, little scents, sticks in them and like actually like testing them and making sure that they're right before we go into production. And we actually sent some out for review too, to get some feedback, cause we're taking it really seriously. We want them to be good.
We want them to be very reminiscent of the ride. Like Ryan was talking about the ET ride. It's got this really unique smell. So we want it to be very reminiscent of that smell, but also be something very pleasant that you would want your home to smell like. So, you know, we kind of all get together and, you know, I tell everybody I'm a certified smellologist because we, you know, we just sort of come up with how we feel the scent should be. And then, you know, we try to come up with different combinations of fragrance oils to get the perfect scent. And like I have smelling parties so that we can all smell it and see if we feel like, you know, we're on point or not. So that's kind of what we do. So everything that you get from us will be a unique smell that you have not, you don't have another candle of this at home. They're all new and different. And that's kind of why we love it.
So when I initially talked to you guys about this, I think it was close to now a month ago or so. I know it was around DragonCon. There were pre-sales. Is that period over? Is it now actual sales? Are we still doing pre-sales? What's being sold right now?
So the pre-sales are done. We're shipping those out this week. As far as right now, like we have a different offer. So, you know, we're going to keep offering different specials and we're going to add on to our right now. We only have the two. We have Shark Bait, which is Jaws inspired. And then we have Confrontation, which is another defunct ride that's not there anymore. So, you know, it's like a cool thing to have memory of. It's called Banana Breath. Right now, if you buy those, it's called the Remember the Movies like pack. So like you can buy both of them together and you get a discount on them. And we've offered some other things, like if you get it through the Tales from the Jaws Ride website, the book I was talking about, you can get free shipping. So there's just different options available now. But the actual pre-order special is over with. But we're going to have pre-orders for other stuff for December coming up because we have some very, very cool things coming up in December.
And now when you go to the theme parks, you can write it off as research.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. See, I gotcha. I'm keen to your game now.
Not that that's our motivation, but
not at all.
It's a wonderful byproduct.
You just got to go around these theme parks and now just to smell, just to sit there and smell, take in the odors, right?
Well, there's so many. I mean, you know, walking to Disney, it's like right. You're smelling the churros and you're smelling, you know, the... You know, there's like, so it's like you're in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's got like, you know, its own little unique musk, you know, it's like it's there's just like a lot of unique things about a theme park that you don't, you know, you can't really bring home with you. So we're eventually going to expand to have a lot of really interesting things.
That sounds very cool. And I am happy to help support in any way I can, including putting links to the show notes for where people can get them, which is...
ThemeParkAlchemy.com.
Awesome. Well, Nicole, since you are a guest, a first timer here, you are now going to endure what we like to call the geek seat.
Ooh, I'm nervous.
There's nothing really to be nervous about. Well, kind of, sort of. You know, I'm sure you're used to, you know, tough questions and maybe ropes and chains and stuff like that too. So you never know.
Yeah, like every music video we've ever shot of the house.
Exactly. See? I knew you would have a witty comeback to that, sir.
That's right. Also true.
I kind of figured. So, Nicole, are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
I am.
All right. What was your favorite geek moment?
Okay, so I am first and foremost a horror geek. So... several years ago, I think it was 2010, Kane Hodder came to Dragon Con. Now, meeting Kane Hodder at a convention is not an unusual thing. It's not, I mean, he does the con circuit like crazy. But this was before the Days of the Dead convention had come to Atlanta. So the only convention that I had been to was Dragon Con. And it was the first time that I got to meet someone. I'm obsessed with Friday the 13th and obsessed with Jason Voorhees and that whole thing. So getting to meet Kane Hodder was like huge for me. And it was right when Hatchet 2 was getting ready to come out. They were finishing it up and it was coming, that was going to be coming out in like a couple of months, or like a month after Dragon Con. So I actually got to meet Kane Hodder, who was Jason Voorhees in four different Friday the 13th movies. And I got to talk to him for like an hour. And since then, like, I've met him numerous times and talked to him at a lot of cons, and he's wonderful. But like that first time, I geeked out so hard. I was like, not only am I talking to, you know, a four-time Jason Voorhees, I'm talking to, you know, like the guy from Hatchet. Like, I was just like, you know, Victor Crowley. And he was geeking out about how cool Hatchet 2 was going to be. And he was telling me about like, oh my God, you're going to love this scene. And in this one scene, I did this thing and it's so cool. And it was just a moment of being like, I'm sitting here geeking out with Kane Hodder, and this is the coolest thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life.
So it was a general geek fest. It was awesome.
Yes. There was just geeking back and forth all over the place.
Cool.
I like how you referenced him as a four-time, like, I was just like it's some sort of like belt that he, championship belt that he was wearing.
He does wear the Jason championship belt. I'm convinced of that. I think it's under his shirt all the time.
I love it. I love it.
What was your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
Okay, so another thing that I geek out really, really hard about is Stephen King. So I love Stephen King. In particular, my favorite like book series of all time is the Dark Tower series. So for many, many years, they were talking about making a Dark Tower movie. And for many, many years, I was like, I don't think that's a very good idea because, you know, it's like seven books long and thousands of pages. And I just was like, I don't know how you could do that story justice. And the Dark Tower movie came out. And we'll just say that that was a disappointing geek moment.
Not the first person to say that.
I was sensing where that was going.
I love it. I love that story so much. And so it's horrible that it has not gotten the treatment that it should get. And I don't know that it ever could, but that's a whole nother conversation.
What geeks you out the most?
I love, and I hate to be like redundant, but I mean, I love talking about horror and horror movies and podcasting about it. The fact that like I've gotten to spend this entire year doing a podcast with one of my best friends on the planet, talking about my favorite thing on the planet. It's pretty great. Yeah. Like I geek out hard about it all the time. I'm like, this is so fun.
No, totally understand that. That a lot of people say that about what they're doing right now. It's pretty cool.
I adore being able to do that and being able to work on it and trying to get it to grow.
That is awesome, man. That is really, really awesome. What turns your geek off, though?
You know, I really hate the geek on geek hate. It seems like a lot of times as geeks, we are kind of judgy about each other, you know, and I try really hard never to be that, you know, like you don't know as much about this thing as I do. And so therefore your geek isn't as good as mine, or, you know, just being, very negative about things that I feel like maybe we could just kind of take a deep breath and chill out and, you know, geek a little softer and with a little less geek on geek hate.
That's one of the number one answers.
Look at me.
Hey, you're doing great so far. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Well, let's just say on brand, and I would love to meet the characters from The Dark Tower, Roland and Eddie and Susanna and Jake and Oi, if anybody's familiar with the story. That story to me, I started reading it when I was very young, I don't know, maybe 12-ish. And then obviously like forward as the books came out. And I was always able to picture myself having that adventure and being in that world. And so like, you know, if I woke up tomorrow in, you know, Midworld, that would be pretty much the most amazing thing ever.
Could understand that completely.
Yeah.
You'd probably be a happy lady for the rest of your life if that happened.
I would be. And hopefully it would last a while because it's very dangerous over there.
Oh, of course. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Well, let's just go and say Jason Voorhees. Because even though I love him, pretty sure that he would bury a machete into my face.
Oh, without thinking twice.
Yes. No thought at all.
I'm your biggest... Never mind.
Exactly. Oh my God, I love you so much. Oh, I'm dead.
Exactly. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
I'm not sure if this is necessarily geek, but it's kind of geeky to me.
That's all that counts.
I'm like an old valley girl from up north, so I say the word wicked a lot. So everything is wicked cool, wicked awesome, wicked badass. And I probably use it entirely too much, but it's one of my favorite descriptive words.
Okay, that's cool. I like that. What is your idea? Cool. It's wiki cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's wiki cool. It must be from New England.
I am. I'm from Connecticut.
Okay. Totally makes sense then.
Totally. Like, oh my God.
Like, whoa. It's like awesome.
Like, barf me out the door, man.
Ugh.
Cool. Okay, now we're getting into weird, like, that's Valley Girl stuff.
Hey, you know, what can I say? I was close to New Jersey, and there was just bleed over.
Wow.
Yeah, New Jersey and the Valley. They're right next to each other. You know that. Come on. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Honestly, my ideal geek occupation would be doing makeup and props and scary, creepy horror stuff for horror movies. I've gotten opportunities to do some stuff like that for some Casket Creatures videos because I know a guy, and it's been fantastic. And I've had a lot of other opportunities to do some special effects makeup and things like that. And there's nothing that is more fun to me than like making things and making gross things. I absolutely love it. And if I could do that for a living, I would be beside myself.
Nope. Totally understand that. It's great when you have a passion and you could be able to do that for a living. That would just be awesome.
I love to make things, and I particularly love to make gross things.
Even better. Sometimes some people like making the grosser, the better.
Yeah, of course.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Oh God, I would not be happy working in IT or with computers.
The number one answer.
Really? that's not my thing. I actually love to fix things and I love to build and make things, just not compute. I'm not good with it. It makes me feel like an airhead. I'm just not at all good with it. Thankfully, Ryan is pretty darn good with it. So that's all on him. I'm terrible. I just get mad at the computer and swear at it until somebody else does something.
Everyone has their strengths, and you know, some people get terrified looking at a computer and having to do something on it.
Yeah, one of my strengths is knowing that I'm terrible at working on a computer.
That's even better.
Yeah.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy? This is your final question, so let's hear it.
Can I just like podcast full time while, simultaneously like making cool props and costumes and masks and things like that. That would be amazing. I would love to see my podcast grow into something that I could put 100% of my focus into. I mean, I love it the way it is, but I would love to be able to do it full time. It's so much fun.
Mm-hmm. I completely would be there right next to you on that one.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be amazing?
I think all four of us would be there. It'd be like, yep, pay us for the podcast. That's right. We're making millions. Our name is Hardwick. I mean, no. Never. Let me rephrase that. Well, got some great news for you. You have made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations.
I survived.
You did. We went a little easy. No, not just kidding. We gave you the hard questions just like everybody else. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young lady what she's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription and a value easily worth $8. Even.
$8 billion.
I mean, that's pretty good. I don't have $8 right now. That's pretty sweet.
No.
Well, as Ryan can tell you, that is station currency. So it drops in value significantly the closer you get to Earth. And if you go down to your basement, then you end up owing us money. So it's kind of weird. So, but.
Well, we won't do laundry tonight.
Yeah, I don't know. My basement is a terrifying death pit. So we'll stay out of there.
Well, very cool. Well, it was great to like have you join us and to hear, of course, all about everything that you're interested and involved in. So, yeah, we're not done with you yet.
Uh-oh. Do I got to earn $8 more?
No.
We don't do that here on the station. You know, once you make it into the Geek Seat, you technically don't even ever get out. So Ryan still has the scars from it. So
yeah, I'm still in there.
So let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment. And we are going to be talking all about Ash Williams.
Yay!
I got a story to tell today.
Hey, everybody. Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. As always, this is Michelle. Hard to believe, but the Cameron Crowe movie, Almost Famous, the Oscar-winning Almost Famous, is almost 20 years old. Came out in 2000. A musical of the movie is in progress, and it could be headed to Broadway. It will have a book by Cameron Crowe based on the screenplay. The music will be by Pulitzer and Tony Award winner Tom Kitt, and Cameron Crowe and Kitt will write the lyrics. Kate Bush, many of her albums have been unavailable on vinyl for at least a decade, but her entire back catalog is going to be reissued on vinyl and CD in November. Good news and bad news for American fans. This is in the UK only. American fans can go through Amazon.uk, and hopefully there will be a stateside release. There will be four vinyl boxes, two CD boxes. The first two sets are out on November 16th and the last two on November 30th. One box is made up of rarities that are previously unreleased on vinyl and an entire disc of cover versions. It's being called the first and definitive program of remastering in the press release. However, there are a lot of things missing. There's no extended mix from the Red Shoes era. A few B-sides, like Not This Time and Dreamtime, aren't there. No instrumental Running Up That Hill. No video mix of Cloud Busting. So we don't know what's going to happen with those tracks, if they'll ever get this treatment or not. Also, something you don't often see, Kate Bush remastered these herself with assistance from James Guthrie, who worked with Pink Floyd. Not often you see an artist remastering their own work. And it's the most wonderful time of the year. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nomination season is almost upon us. The nominations for the class of 2019 will be announced this coming Tuesday, October 9th at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Hall SiriusXM channel, Facebook, and Twitter. Could this be the monkey's year? Don't know. If you want to see my predictions and get links to predictions from other Hall-watching people, see my blog, iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com. Next week, we will definitely be talking about this. We'll catch you then.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as $1 a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
And shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul and seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek.
We're so sorry, skeletons, you're so misunderstood. You only want to socialize.
Welcome back, everyone. And now it's time to talk about, well, if horror has a hero, his name is Ashley Joanna Williams. And we're going to talk all about him. Of course, Ryan, and why did I just completely mess that up?
Fred?
Yes, Fred. All right. 3, 2. Am I going to start over from scratch, Mike?
Yeah. Just go ahead. And it's Fred Williams. Remember that.
That's right. That's right. 3, 2. Welcome back, everyone. And now it's time to talk about if horror has a hero, his name must be Ashley Joanna Williams. And yeah, we're going to talk all about the legacy that is Ash. And to do it, of course, we have Ryan and Nicole are still here. They're still, Nicole's still strapped to the seat. And we also have with us Dave, aka Phantom Troublemaker. Welcome back to the station, Dave.
It's great to be back. I don't know. Have I been back as Dave?
I don't think so, because it still sounds weird for me to say that.
Yeah, even though that's what I was in the beginning.
Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true.
It's come full circle now. I'm back home.
Now, Dave, are you familiar with Ryan and Nicole? Do we need to introduce each other?
I maybe have met them a couple of times.
We've got a passing familiarity.
Zone. Yeah, passing familiarity. That's a good way to put it.
Who is this guy?
Bozo. I'm excited to be on the show with such a podcasting luminary and a big fancy rock star.
I am somewhat of a podcasting luminary.
I'm just strapped in this seat over here.
Ryan, you're a podcasting hoe is what you are.
I'm glad to bring a little bit of that needless things irregular mentality over to the Earth Station One podcast. I'm glad
You're
to have you all here.
Irregular mentality.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how this goes. Evil Dead was the big start of it all. 1981. Now, last week we talked about a very, very important independent horror movie, Night of Living Dead, that just changed everything. In 1981, a similar story happened with Evil Dead. I mean, I don't know if you can really say it was as impactful, but in a lot of ways, Evil Dead really did change, was a game changer. And I just rewatched it for the first time in ages. I've seen Evil Dead 2 a lot. I've seen Army of Darkness countless of times. I just last week finished watching Ash versus the Evil Dead. And for those people who, if they haven't seen any of those, we are going to spoil the heck out of all of that. So if it has Ash Williams in it, we will be talking about it here, at least as far as the films and the series goes. As far as the comic books, maybe other things, maybe not so much. But we'll see how we'll see where this conversation goes.
But we're going to get into all of it.
So, well, let me ask you, we'll start with you, Dave. What was your first experience, or where were you introduced to Ash? Was it the first Evil Dead movie, or was it a little bit later?
It was not the first Evil Dead movie. It was going to Blockbuster back in the 80s. That's how we found horror, was going into Blockbuster or the movie store or whatever your local mom and pop video store was, going in the horror aisle and just looking for something with a badass cover. and the potential for boobs. I gotta tone it down a little for you guys. The first one I saw was Evil Dead 2, which remains one of my favorite movies of all time. It was gross and funny. And the main thing, though, was Bruce Campbell as Ash. Like, if it hadn't been for him, that movie wouldn't have. And look, I am the biggest fan of Sam Raimi. I love what they accomplished with all of these movies, but with that one in particular. But without Bruce Campbell, I don't think it would have stuck in my brain the way that it did. And then later, it wasn't until later I would go back and watch the first one and discover that while it's still insane, it has a very different tone from the rest of the series.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's one of the things I rediscovered when I rewatched it as well. I was like, "Woo, this is very, like, it's almost like prenatal Ash. Like, it's like he's there, but he's not yet really there."
Well, and it's more just, I mean, they were just trying to make more of a straightforward horror movie. Now, there's spots where Raimi can't help himself and gets the slapstick in. But yeah, it's very much a different thing.
Yeah. Nicole, what about you? What was your introduction to Ash?
I actually saw the first Evil Dead first. And then, you know, I think it was like a video store thing, like Dave said. You know, I would go to my local video store and wander around, and the cover art would just, like, you know, to this day, there's movies I love strictly because of the cover art in the video store. So, you know, I got Evil Dead and I watched that and I loved it because I've always loved, you know, campy, gory, crazy horror. And then I watched Evil Dead 2 and I was like, what? Because it was so different in tone. But then I was like, okay, so this isn't actually a sequel. This is like a redo. And it was also very different. Like, there weren't remakes back then like there are now. I mean, there were, but, you know, it wasn't like a new remake every other week. So, like, watching the movie and then very shortly thereafter watching what was essentially like its own reboot, I was at first like, what the hell? But I loved them both for what they each were and also kind of how they work together. And then after that, you know, I saw Army of Darkness, and it's just like that one, I think, is where like the genius really comes together, and it's beautiful and it shined. Like, that's where we get him, like, with, you know, Groovy and Give Me Some Sugar Baby and like all that, where Ash really gets to shine in Army of Darkness. It's beautiful.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, almost everything he says is something that everybody quotes later.
Exactly.
Every single line out of his mouth. Yeah. Ryan, what about you?
Yeah, so I remember going to the video store as well, and I rented Army of Darkness, not knowing what it was, just being like, that looks awesome. And I got Return of the Jedi, and which I'd seen, obviously, but I hadn't seen any of the Evil Deads. I didn't even know there was Evil Deads. Like, I was just like, oh, Army of Darkness, that sounds cool, and just got it, or my dad got it for me or whatever, and like, I remember me and my dad watched Army of Darkness, and we were both like, this is the best thing ever. We're laughing. We're like, this is amazing. And then, I would watch Return of the Jedi. And then I spent like my whole summer just being like, can I rent these again? Like, can you, you know, pay whatever to rent these again? Because like, I just want to watch these all summer. And I spent an entire summer just watching those two movies, which I couldn't do now. But for some reason, when I was a kid, when I was like 7 or 8, I could do that. I could just watch the same movies over and over and over again for months. But I just fell in love with Army of Darkness, and I was really confused by the opening. Like, I was like, what's happening? Like, what is all this? But then I was like, okay, cool. Now he's, you know, the skeletons. I love this. So when I finally realized that there were other ones, I remember my dad took me to Suncoast Video, and I had to work out in the lawn and like rake leaves so I could buy the VHS tapes of Evil Dead 1 and 2. And yeah, we sat there and watched all three of them. And
which Suncoast did you go to?
Mall of Georgia.
I might have been working that day.
That's crazy. Little Ryan Cadaver walked in and bought a tape of Evil Dead.
Wow.
That's awesome. But yeah, so I just fell in love. I was really, really freaked out by the first Evil Dead. After going from Army of Darkness to Evil Dead, I was like, oh my God. But then Evil Dead 2 was like kind of in the middle of the two of them. So I saw them like way out of order. But I still think Army of Darkness is my favorite of the whole series. I just love that movie so much. It's so rewatchable.
Absolutely. I think they're all completely rewatchable in their own way because there's always something new to find. And then even when you know it backward and forward, you just enjoy watching it. Like it's almost like a good song that comes on the radio. You just want to just keep hearing it and turn it up.
Absolutely. I mean, those are all movies that you never aren't in the mood to watch. At least I'm never not in the mood to watch.
No, every time that we record, we record out in this cabin in the woods, and every time we bring cabin in the woods type movies, and Evil Dead 2 is always like the first one we watch every time.
For me, rewatchability plays a huge role in my opinion of any movie. Like, I can really dig a movie, but if it's not something I need to see again, it just doesn't make it onto my favorites list. But all of the Evil Dead movies are eminently rewatchable for different reasons. They're ones that I could put in any time. I've never gotten sick of them like I have with some things. Like, you know how you find a new movie and you're like, this is incredible. And you watch it again a week later, you're like, this is amazing. And then eventually you're like, I don't know if I ever need to watch that again. these I can watch anytime.
Yeah, I own them all they've come out in various forms. There's different versions out there of almost all three of these movies. It's almost insane how many times like you can have copies of this, or how many different versions of these movies you can have. You can have a whole shelf of just these three movies.
Yeah, I'm not buying Army of Darkness again. I've owned it so many times on so many different versions.
I'm say that.
Yeah.
But when Scream Factory puts out the special edition that looks like the Necronomicon that comes with the NECA Ash figure.
We'll own it. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'll buy it. You're right.
We were just talking the other day. Somebody, I can't remember what it was. Somebody said, like, what is the such and such edition of Army of Darkness? And
yeah, they're like, why do you own six copies of Army of Darkness? I'm like, they're all different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know how many copies we have because we each had several copies, and then we combined our movie collection. So now we have like a whole shelf of Evil Dead, particularly Army of Darkness.
Yeah, I've owned, I would say I've owned dozens of different versions of those movies. It's ridiculous because, you know, you had Anchor Bay that were the heroes of home video back in the day.
Yeah.
And they would put it out, and it was just like the fact that it was a copy that hadn't been watched 1,000 times at the video store was enough of a special feature.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they started producing DVDs with all the special features and interviews and behind the scenes and commentaries, and every edition had a slightly different set of features because Anchor Bay knew what they were doing. They knew they had us hooked as horror fans. I think genre fans have a different thirst for movies than regular movie fans. I think we're the ones that really eat up every bit of information that we can get about the process, about the director, about the effects, about the music. Like, I want to know everything I can know about movies that I love. And Anchor Bay latched onto that. And that's why I've bought six different versions of Army of Darkness, because it's every time there's like, and this one has an interview with Sam Raimi on the toilet. I'm getting it.
Yeah. I'm the same way. You can't get I don't know. There's something about horror fans have a passion that, like, if you like romance movies, it's not the same, you know? And part of that passion is we want to devour everything, like you said.
Well, and it's more communal. We recognize each other for what we are. And when you get into the behind the scenes, when you get into the director talking about their vision and about how they made things happen, they become part of your community. You see, like, that guy's just like me. He just wants to enjoy this stuff and make it happen. And it really is a different feeling from just watching Armageddon.
I mean, Armageddon is a strong classic film.
Wow.
A good
okay
soundtrack.
Just real quick, I do think I saw Evil Dead 2 first, although I must have seen them like within a close proximity. Either I saw Evil Dead 2 with a friend, and then I was like, what is this? And I was like, oh, now I'm hooked, and now I want to see the first one. And so we rented it, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, but it's not as fun. And then I was a fan from there. So, and I think, to your point, Dave, I think that, yes, Bruce Campbell was the selling factor of this series of movies. But I also think it was a marriage between Sam Raimi's directorial style and Bruce Campbell's performance. I think together they work so well together that if you remove one, it doesn't work, or it has the potential to not work as well.
For sure. For sure. I totally agree with that. I mean, it's their collaborative spirit is what makes these things magic. But Evil Dead 2, it could have been the exact same movie, but if it had been some standard issue 80s dude in that role, like the blonde guy from Karate Kid.
Right.
I wouldn't have latched onto that movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, you know, if Bruce was doing a lot of the stuff that he's doing in these movies and it's not directed by a guy who can feature that and cut those scenes to accommodate that, then it falls apart as well.
Well, most directors wouldn't have had him doing all that stuff.
You're probably
it would have just been straightforward.
Well, also, you know, all of those guys went to high school together.
Right.
Yeah. So when they made these movies, I mean, these are childhood friends that were like playing this from when they were kids. And then they like actually, you know, made a movie. So you had years and years of, you know, friendship and trust and, you know, all of that. I think that played a huge part in everybody being successful in the role that they played in it.
Yeah. And yeah. I also think like when multiple friends hang out long enough, they all kind of develop their own sense of humor that's kind of like on brand for just that group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really obvious. Like, and especially like Evil Dead 2, you can tell they hit their stride and kind of came up with their own brand of slapstick horror that, like, I know that there was horror comedy before that, but they really defined horror comedy to me.
Well, and Nicole, since you brought it up, their roots together, two essential books for this conversation are The Evil Dead Companion. I can't remember who put it together, but it details the Raimis and Campbell and Tappert's relationship from the beginning, goes through all the movies. It's fantastic. And then, of course, If Chins Could Kill.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. Cool. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yes. And, of course, the Necronomicon, of course.
Well, yeah, yeah, you got to throw that one in there.
Yeah,
we read it aloud every night here.
Before dinner.
As long as you're pronouncing the words correctly, you're all right.
I said your damn words.
So here's something that I find interesting, that when the first Evil Dead movie comes out, it's right in 1981, and it's at a period of time where the slasher movie is kind of still a thing. Like it's the horror genre, right? And that the one of the big tropes of that, the slasher movies, is the final girl, right? The Evil Dead movies just totally do away with that. They don't even acknowledge it, really. I think maybe when you start watching the first Evil Dead, or maybe even the second, you kind of think, oh, well, you know, one of these girls is going to survive, just because you're so used to that formula. But instead, these movies just go a completely different way, right from the outset. Do you think that this sort of the way, that's why this stands out a little bit more, because it was so different when it came out at a time when most of it was like just monsters and you know, women survivors?
You know, honestly, I wasn't aware of any of the things you just laid down. Until I was well into my 20s, like I didn't, because here's the thing about that video store learning experience is you don't have eras. You don't have like, oh, in 1981, this is what was happening. You're just renting everything that's there. So I'm going for anything from Chopping Mall to Evil Dead to, I was going to say Phantoms, but that would have been a little later than when we're talking about, but like, but you know what I mean? Like I wasn't aware of eras. It was all just horror and I didn't know tropes and I didn't have expectations for any movie, which is something I miss, by the way. Like I'm very jealous. I was thinking about this the other day. I don't remember what movie we were watching, but it was something, I was watching something with my son and it occurred to me, he's never seen a movie like this before. So he doesn't know what to expect. He doesn't know what the twists and turns are for this kind of movie. Cause now, you know, all of us that are having this conversation right now, I bet there's very little that surprises us in movies. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. It's rare.
You kind of know what's going on, but when I, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12 and really discovering this stuff, like I said, I didn't know tropes. I didn't have expectations. I didn't know what every twist and turn was going to be. So I didn't like the whole Final Girl thing. Looking back, you're probably right. And that probably did make this stand out a bit. But to me, it was what we were talking about, that combination of Raimi and Campbell that made it magic.
Yeah. And I think it's probably like me and Dave are about the same age. So we didn't have, websites to go and read about movies. Like, and if they were already out in the movie store, we didn't see the trailer. And you couldn't just look it up. So like I was completely driven by box art, like, and then whatever it would say on the back, if it even said anything on the back. So yeah, I didn't know that this was part of this era of film or this or that. And I didn't even have like eventually I got a Fangoria subscription, you know, when I really realized that, you know, I was like head over heels for this stuff. But initially I would just wander through the horror section and just pick something that looked cool and scary. So yeah, like it was really cool that we'd got to see stuff without any expectations, and we don't have that anymore. And I miss that.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally like, I hate myself every time I watch a trailer on YouTube.
Oh yeah. I was so mad. Like I saw the new Aquaman thing. I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I just saw the entire movie. Why did I do that to myself?
Right. Right.
I ruined it. Like, why? No, I'm with you. Like, there was just so many cool moments. Like the first time I rented like Return of the Living Dead, and I just thought it was like a sequel to Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Dead. Like, I didn't know. I was just like,
oh, it is. And don't you let anybody tell you different.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But yeah, it's like, you know, things like that. It was just a delight. I was like, oh, this is totally not what I expected, but it's great. Like, yeah, I do miss that. That's a very good point.
Yeah, when I was introduced to the Evil Dead movies, it was when I was in college. So same thing with Return of, Night of the Living Dead or Return of the Living Dead. So those were big, like, college movies that were going around, like, you know, the dorm rooms and all that kind of stuff. And people were trading the tapes and all that. So and we were looking at it probably a little differently because, you know, I was in film school at the time. So of course, I was looking at a lot of things more differently that way. But I just do find it interesting that, you know, I mean, when you think about, like, prior to this, like, all the big horror movie characters are monsters, really. Most of them are monsters, whether you're Dracula, Frankenstein, the creature, you know, the mummy, the wolfman, et cetera, et cetera. I found it interesting that, and they must really love this franchise over in England, because according to Wikipedia, Empire Magazine picked Ash as the 24th greatest movie character of all time. And that's pretty high, 24 of all time.
Yeah, too low.
And in 2013, they voted him the greatest horror movie character ever. Now I'm like, and he's not even like a monster. Like, I was just like, that's really crazy.
Yeah, but he's got so much personality. It's easier to relate to him, or like I looked at Ash like a superhero. Like, I was like, oh my God, he's got a chainsaw arm. Like, I wanted everything Ash, toys, video games, like every single thing. Whereas like I love Jason, love Freddy, and still would obviously buy anything with him on it. But I don't know. He's got like this personality. You can kind of relate to him. And he's like, you know, he's like an everyman that gets thrown in these awful situations and always comes out on top somehow.
But yeah, you're right, though. Like, what other horror movie is defined by its hero as opposed to its villain?
Right.
I can't really. I mean, like, you know, there's some, but I can't think of any that holds a candle to Ash even remotely.
Well, I'm sure you guys can do the same thing I can do. You look at your horror toys shelf and see Freddy and Jason and Leatherface and like Michael Myers and all these characters, and then human Ash in the middle of them. And he's it.
Yeah. I'm looking at a whole bunch of villains right now and Ash.
Yeah. Well, Ash and Elvis Presley, but also played by Bruce Campbell. So there you go.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah. He's so damn good in that movie.
Our Ash toy is right next to the Boba Hotep toy.
But and otherwise, you would have to, I mean, to go with another hero or heroine, it would probably be like Laurie Strode, right? Maybe would be second, and that would be a distant second.
She's wonderful, but when you think of Halloween, who do you think of?
Right. Michael Myers.
Yep.
When you think of Evil Dead, who do you think of?
Think of Ash.
Exactly.
Yeah. I
think it's the only franchise where you think of the hero before anything else.
This is really more superhero, but it certainly edges into horror. But again, sort of looking at the horror toys shelf, you also have Peyton Westlake, who is another Sam Raimi character. But Darkman, I think, is one of the other few sort of iconic, again, it's a superhero movie, but it's also a horror movie. I mean, it's Phantom of the Opera meets The Punisher. Yeah. But again, it's from the mind of Sam Raimi. So there's an interesting thing there where he likes his heroes, which we found out when he, you know, went on to direct the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the only other one I can think of, and not to the same extent, but maybe like Reggie Bannister.
Sure. Yeah. Good call.
That would be a solid one. He's one that I want a toy of.
As a matter of fact, I would say he's got to be number two, right?
Yeah.
He has to be.
I would still stand by my theory, though, that when you think of Phantasm, you think of the tall man.
I don't know. I actually think of Reggie. I just think he's okay. Badass.
Badass.
Yeah, you're right in that the tall man is more indicative of Phantasm, or if not the tall man, the spheres at least.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for characters that are sort of constant protagonists, Reggie would be it. And you're right, Laurie Strode. You're right, Mike. She would be another, just because she's appeared in. Now, this will be her fifth.
This will be her fifth one, right?
Fifth Halloween movie.
Yep.
Ripley would be a good one.
Ripley would be a great one. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Oh, you're right. And it's funny because I don't, in my head, the Aliens franchise is not so much horror as science fiction, even though the first movie is very much a horror movie.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but it just sort of crosses so many barriers.
Yeah, because the first one's a horror movie. The second one's an action movie. The third one's some kind of weird noir.
Yes.
And the fourth one is poop.
Yes, it is. You're absolutely right.
Dude. Yeah, almost literally. getting back to the Evil Dead movies, one thing I am also in the first movie, I mean, he's very much he very much plays the fear element. I mean, that's why we only get like really a partial Ash. Like he's
sure.
Ashley is afraid of everything. There's a couple of moments when I was watching this week, and there's a couple moments where you see a light in his eyes, like either I've had enough and I need to fight back, or I think I've actually beat this thing and all right, me. But it's very, very quick. Like it's not, and then Evil Dead 2, of course, we get a lot of that. That's when, you know, swallow this and all the other, like, you know, like I've had enough, then I'm going to beat you down kind of thing. We get Ash, and then by Army of Darkness, he's the guy. Like he really, literally in the movies and then watching it as a character, like he is the man. When it got like, he might have a lot of, and they play this off in the series.
he might have a lot of faults, but you know, even his best friends are even will say like if you need someone to help fight Deadites, this is the guy. Like, he can back it up. And I love that about him. He can back it up. Like, it's, he doesn't just trip and just, you know, win the day. He wins the day because he's actually really good at this.
I think it's a little bit of everything, because I think there are points where he sort of trips into it, especially earlier in the series.
Yes.
Like, oops. but he evolves into that cocky, sometimes frequently too cocky, Ash that we love.
I think that what you said is absolutely on point. I feel like, you know, there are a bunch of buddies who made this horror movie, because and again, this is where you go back and you listen to the commentaries and the interviews and you read the books and you get all this information about how these things came to be. But you look at Evil Dead, and what you're seeing is just these guys struggling to make this thing happen. They're not thinking about the future of the Ash Williams character. They're not thinking about necessarily the lore that surrounds the Necronomicon and the Deadites and everything else. They're just trying to make a horror movie happen. They made it happen. They made some money. They got some notoriety, and they had an opportunity to follow it up. And what fascinates me about it is, rather than just doing the lazy thing and creating more of the same, they, as Nicole pointed out earlier, they took it, and the first 5-10 minutes or whatever of Evil Dead 2 is basically like a synopsis the first movie.
Just like the third movie, the first 5 minutes is a synopsis of the first two movies.
And mm-hmm. and they tightened it up. They changed the narrative ever so slightly,
yep,
because they knew they had the opportunity. And this is what kills me, is the same people who will get so angry at George Lucas for making changes to Star Wars will thoroughly endorse everything Sam Raimi has ever done. but they had the opportunity to say, hey, we have this thing and we put our hearts and souls into it, but now we have the opportunity to tweak it and to make it fit a vision that's a little bit different than what it was when we were in the freezing cold mud and water of Tennessee. Is that right? Weren't they in Tennessee?
Yeah.
Tennessee and Michigan and Detroit, where they're from. So they're,
yeah. So now we have more resources. We have a clearer vision. We're more people, because think about your whole life, how much more, you know, granted at 42 years old, I'm still a big idiot, but I'm less of an idiot than I was when I was 20. So their growth, not only as people, but as filmmakers, factors into it. And every single time, rather than just sitting back and doing the same thing and saying we can make money because now we have names, they took the initiative to really create something different and special every time, and to mold it to who they were then. And that's one of the things I really love about this franchise as it's gone on, from Evil Dead to Ash versus Evil Dead, and even including the Evil Dead re-intro booting thing.
Right.
And, you know, also Evil Dead, they were either in college or right out of college, and it was the second movie that they had ever made. And the first movie was like some weird crime, private eye.
Crime spree.
Noir thing, yeah.
Yes. It's terrible, but everybody needs to see it.
Crime Wave.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's what I'm here for. I know we've only got like, you know, maybe 10 minutes left, but, and it's a really shame to try to squeeze this into 10 minutes, but, we haven't really talked about the series, and, I just want to get your overall thoughts on the three seasons that we got of Ash versus the Evil Dead. Were you disappointed? Did you love it? Did you hate it? What did you think of the ending? We'll start with, you, Nicole.
I thought it was wonderful, but, you know, I kind of think that everything that Bruce Campbell does is wonderful.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. yeah, I've seen Alien Attack or whatever, that Sci-Fi Channel movie.
I mean, I've seen some pretty wonderfully bad Bruce Campbell. Yeah, but I mean,
he's made some mistakes.
You know, I thought that they took the character that we were left with after Army of Darkness, and that's the Ash that they put into the show. Because I think that was like the most beloved Ash, you know, that very flawed, cocky to the point of arrogance, guy, but yeah, who can kill the heck out of a deadite, and can, you know, wield a boomstick like nobody's business. And I thought they had really, really good supporting cast for him. I loved Lucy Lawless. Like, she's still fabulous. She's just so darn pretty and also a butt kicker in anything she does.
She is hotter now than she was when she was Xena.
Dude, so much. Like, that woman has like grown into hotness and like continues to grow into hotness. It's great. But she's like, she's so not dainty, and that's what I love about her. She's like, I'm hot and I'm gonna punch you in the neck and it's gonna like really hurt.
And I'm not afraid to like get really dirty when it comes to a lot of these like really gross, dirty scenes that I have to do.
Yeah. I mean, she's like phenomenal. I absolutely love her. And I love, you know, his little sidekicks were really great. I mean, I think that it was fantastic. It was cast so well, it was written well, and it was just incredibly fun. I hate that it's off, but I also like, you know, it had a good run, and I like when things go out on a high note and go out strong. So, you know, I got mixed feelings about it not being on anymore, but I think it's fantastic.
Cool. But when you say mixed feelings, you mean you're sorry that it's gone, not that it was bad, right?
Like, no,
that
was mixed, right? Because like, I would love for it to go on forever. But realistically, you know,
it just can't, right?
Everything has got its run, and everything has got a point where if it does go on for too long, it's going to start losing some of the magic that it has. And I mean, like, three seasons, you know, I think it probably could have gone four, but it's good. And I think it was, you know, what we have is very strong. So that's awesome.
Ryan, what about you?
Absolutely loved it. I think that, you know, the first season, there were moments where I was like, I don't know how long this can sustain itself. Because it did start, there's a few episodes there where it lost my interest a little bit. But I loved, you know, obviously loved the cast. The pilot was so incredibly strong. The pilot was one of the best episodes of the whole show, in my opinion. Yeah.
I think having Sam come back and direct that first one to set the tone was so vital. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I loved, you know, all the supporting characters, and, you know, I hate to see him go. But, you know, if they had gone too long, you know, it could have dipped in quality. So I'm glad we, you know, because like I said, it did start to lose me a little bit in the first season. And then season two, to me, was just phenomenal. And then it just kept being phenomenal at that point. So, yeah, I love it. And I'll revisit it really often. And it really sucks. But I get why. I wish that Netflix would pick it up. But I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we'll get Ash back in a video game.
Maybe. Well, yeah, I don't think the character's quite dead, of course, but we'll live on in some form, I'm sure. Dave, what'd you feel about the series?
I loved the first like 3-4 episodes of the first season. I think you can throw the next 3 episodes in the trash, and then the like last 2 or 3 episodes were incredible, and then from there on out, it just kept getting better and more awesome. I loved his sidekicks, Pedro, and what is Angry Girl's name? I'm such a jerk.
I know. I can't remember either.
Kelly, right?
Yep. Kelly. Yep.
And of course, Lucy Lawless is always amazing, from Xena to Spartacus to this. I love watching her, and her talent has grown as amazingly as her looks. But yeah. The entire series is about to come out on Blu-ray. I think it's maybe the 23rd of this month. They're releasing just the whole series on Blu-ray, and I'll absolutely be buying it. It was it was so good. And as far as it being canceled, I'm of the mind that Firefly is perfect. We got one season, we got one movie. It's all excellent, and it didn't have the chance to go bad. And I feel the same way about Ash versus Evil Dead. It would have gotten to the point where it was a habit and not actually enjoyable, because we all know every TV show turns into a habit rather than something we actually look forward to.
Gotcha.
And I never wanted Ash to turn into a habit. And he went out on a high note. I think it had a great ending, and I'm good with it the way it is. And the great thing is, and this is not Ashley J. Williams related, but Fede Alvarez has been talking up a sequel to the Evil Dead reboot a lot lately, and now we have room for that.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm with all you guys. I love the series. I will say that season one was probably the weakest, especially in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Season two, bringing him back to Elk Grove, his dad, played by Lee Majors, was brilliant.
God, so good. Awesome.
So brilliant. And I love the style and everything they put into that second season. I love how you never knew which character was going to happen to, but you knew someone was going to get dumped with something disgusting in single episode of that second season.
Did I call Pablo? Or did I say Carlos or something?
No, you said Pablo.
Did I say Pablo? Yeah. Yay for me. Pablo was essentially our new Ash, because horrible things happened to him all the time. But what was cool is Kelly had horrible stuff happen to her, and Nicole, Lucy Lawless. Yeah. Also, like, everybody went through the ringer, but
that
Pablo
second season,
was
just, you never knew which one it was going to be.
Absolutely. It was like an episode of You Can't Do That on Television, where every time they say the wrong thing and they just get crap dumped all over them.
I was bummed that they didn't do that, continue to do that in the third season, but I get it. That was kind of over, and they had a story to tell with the daughter, and they kind of brought Ash back to that first, Evil Dead movie, even a little bit of the second, bringing his daughter into it, making him kind of believe in something a little bit more. And I really like that story that they told.
Well, and huge props to his daughter, played by Arielle Carver O'Neill. But anyway, she was awesome. She was great. So often when kids are introduced into a franchise, it's horrible. Yeah. And she was great.
So, and I love the ending. The way that it ended was, I didn't know how it was going to go down, if they were just going to kill him off or what. But instead, I mean, his fight continues and he goes on. And I love that. And I want to see that movie. So I don't know if we'll ever see that, but I want to see that. In your opinion, real quick, because we got to end it, but do you think this is the last we see of Bruce Campbell as Ash? Dave?
It's hard to say. I would like to believe that, much like Shawn Michaels, Bruce Campbell means his retirement. Oh, wait, maybe not.
Maybe not.
No, I would, if any time Bruce Campbell is on the is in the credits, I'm going to show up for it. I'm going to say no. We're not going to see Ash again from Bruce Campbell.
All right, Brian.
I think we definitely will see him as Ash again, but I think it's going to be like some of my favorite games were like the Regeneration Fistful of Boomstick games. I think that they're going to do an Evil Dead game with him voicing Ash.
We'll hear him as Ash again.
Ah,
we just won't see him.
There you go.
Right.
There you go. And Nicole?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I don't know that he can ever fully put this down, because it's been such, a part of him, I think, for so many years. I think Ryan's right. We're probably going to see a video game. What was it? Fistful of Boomstick with the midget?
That was Regeneration.
Regeneration. Ugh, I love that game.
That game was great. And it's really reminiscent of the show, actually.
Yeah, that was like fantastic. I would love to see more craziness like that. And I mean, I would definitely watch him as Ash again, but I have a feeling we're going to hear him voice Ash in things like video games and, who knows what else.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. It's been great having you on the show to talk about Ash Williams. And we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the first episode of the new Doctor Who season, The Woman Who Fell to Earth. First off, there may be spoilers in this, so please skip ahead if you don't want them. I loved this episode. I thought the first episode of The 13th Doctor was action-packed and very much a first Doctor episode. Jodie carried the weight of the role of the Doctor wonderfully in this episode, and really made the part her own. I am so excited to see what adventures that she is going to have with her TARDIS and her new companions. The villain was creepy. The teeth were probably the creepiest part for me. I also liked how she told people when they did something wrong. Like after the one guy kicked the villain off of the ledge to his what could have been his death. She called him out and told him how that was uncalled for and wrong. So I loved how she told the villains what they were doing was wrong, and then she just called other people out. It was wonderful. I loved Nan as a character, and I'm really, really sad that she's not going to be a reoccurring character. I had really, really hoped that if she wasn't a dominant member of the TARDIS, she was going to be like Rose's mom and still show up from time to time. And sadly, that was not the case at the end of the episode, and I loved how strong she was. So it made me really, really sad. I am super excited for this season, and I cannot wait to see the new direction the show is going with the new showrunner and a whole new cast. I am just super, super excited. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Earth Station One podcast. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Last weekend, Mike and I had a blast at Monsterama in Alpharetta, Georgia. This is the fifth time that they've held Monsterama here in the Atlanta area. It's a great show. It's put on by our good friends, Anthony and Suzanne. And, you know, that's the key word, I think, to this convention. I mean, sure, it's about classic monsters. It's about celebrating, you know, classic movies and even newer movies. But it's also, I think, really a get together between friends. There's a lot of people that attended this that, you know, it's a smaller show, way smaller than something like Dragon Con. But that's good because it allows you the time. You can breathe. You can just walk around. You can talk to friends for, you know, like more than 10 minutes or more than just seeing somebody and waving hi while you're on your way somewhere and they're on their way somewhere. I mean, you actually get to just relax and chill out and get together with friends and talk all about, you know, everything from really cool movies to books to what's going on in lives and stuff like that. It's just it's a really good vibe. We were happy to do our panel on celebrating 80 years of the Addams Family, which will air. We'll actually bring a lot of Monsterama to you next week because we did a couple of interviews. We did a panel and we just had a blast. So for those people who weren't able to attend, or if you were at Monsterama last weekend and you hung out with us, if you want to relive some of that vibe of that show, tune in next week for that. And for those people that we met or met again, reunited with, or met for the first time, and you're listening to us, you know, howdy, and it was great chatting with you. It's great hanging out. That's what I feel about Monsterama. It's especially after, you know, the craziness that is Dragon Con, Mike, it's nice to have a show that you can go to and just relax.
Yeah, it's great to have a nice relaxed con. And Anthony and Suzanne put on a great show, and their staff can't be beat. They kept on coming by our table asking us if we needed anything. Was there, you know, anything that we needed or whatever? And it was just awesome. And they had They expanded the vendor room this year. It was just all over. It was just a really great con. And if you're into monsters and such, it's can't be beat.
No, I mean, they had some really cool guests. I mean, I, you know, very seldom do I go to a convention and come out the weekend and be like, everything that was on my checklist and more I got to do. And at this show, I got to, you know, I checked out Dacre Stoker's new book. I got to talk to him about that. And I purchased it, so I've got some Halloween reading ahead of me. I got to meet Rachel Talahay. We got to meet Rachel Talahay. That was a moment where she even came up to our table like just out of the blue, and we were both like, "Whoa, that's really awesome!" So that was cool talking to her. And then later on, I talked to her about some of the work that she did on Doctor Who and stuff, and this new season she's pretty excited about. So that was awesome. I sold some books, which is always nice. So for those people who bought books or pins, thank you for that. And it was just cool to hang out with you and Peter mainly because we were all there. The Felt Nerdies people were right near next door, our table neighbors. So that was cool. And, you know, just hanging out and talking to the award-winning Mark Maddox, of course, who's always a treat. Did I say that out loud, Mike? Sorry.
yeah, gee, thanks, Mike. Now you're going to give him an even bigger ego.
Yeah, I know, right. But yes, it was great because, yeah, he came on. Of course, he joined us last week on the Earth Station 1 podcast, and he's going to be joining us again in a couple weeks as well to round out our October episodes. So, and it's just a cool vibe. I mean, so I like the show. They're planning to do another one. It's as far as I know, they're planning to do it next year. The details are still to be determined because unfortunately with small shows like this, it's not a guarantee. So they got to rethink about, they got to see once the smoke clears how well they did this year, see what it's going to take to do a show next year. There may be some changes, but I do feel it's going to happen because I do feel like this show, I think, deserves more people. It really does deserve more people. And it would still feel intimate and small, even if it had, three or four times as many people, just because there's enough room there for people to spread out and do a lot more stuff. So,
oh, exactly. It's a great hotel.
Yeah, it absolutely is. The Marriott Hotel in Alpharetta is really fun. It's a nice venue. So yeah, let's hope that there's a Monsterama 2019. And if there is, Mike and I will be there. So count us in. As far as events coming up, there is only one that I can think of, and that is November 3rd. It's coming up in just a few weeks here. It's the Charlotte Geeks. They hold a gala every year, and so it's the Charlotte Geek Gala. It's at Noah's Event Venue in Charlotte, North Carolina, and our good friends over on the NerdBliss side of the station are going to be attending that. So say howdy to them if you are at the Geek Gala in Charlotte. And that's about it. I do know that yesterday they announced when the next ACC is, the one-day show here, and I do believe it's December 16th, but I don't have that in writing yet, so pencil that into your calendars. It will be a Sunday, so Mike and I will probably be there in some capacity, so you can count that in December. But apart from that, if there are conventions that you want us to help promote or participate in, like we did with Monsterama, do a panel on and just have a lot of fun, please reach out to us. We love being at conventions and we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I want to thank Mike for hosting the segment of talking all about Ash Williams tonight.
It was a blast. It was my pleasure, sir.
Anything you're going to shout out, my friend?
I do. I do want to give a shout out to the other part of the station over in with some quadrant over there that Drew and Cletus have taken over. Earth Station DCU, episode 117. I'm on there. Kevin Eldridge is on there, and we are talking with the guys, the DCU guys, about the animated movie Gotham by Gaslight. have a lot of fun talking about that. It is a great movie. For those people who haven't seen it yet, you know, it qualifies as a Halloween movie, I think. It's got, you know, Jack the Ripper in it. It's really awesome. So we loved it, and we talk all about it on DCU episode 117. So thanks, guys, for having me on.
That is awesome. And, of course, got to thank our guests for joining us tonight. Dave, thank you for coming back to the station, my friend.
It was awesome to be back. I love talking to you guys, and ESO obviously is where I, you know, got my podcasting start. You can find me each and every Friday on the Needless Things podcast, which you can find at needlessthingspodcast.com. In addition to the articles we post throughout the week about movies, music, and all manner of pop culture dorkery, you can follow me as Phantom Turbomaker on Twitter and Instagram, and as Dave West on Facebook. And please join the Needless Things podcast Facebook group.
It's a fun bunch of folks over there, and they have some great discussions. So
absolutely.
Yep. And it's so weird that we birthed him. It was awesome.
And wow. Painful.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, he was already full size. Ouch. And of course, Ryan, thank you so, so much.
Hey, it was a blast. Follow me. The Casket Creatures, we're on everything, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Facebook's probably the best way to keep up with us. We post all our events. We got tons of shows coming up, especially in Atlanta, but we got some surrounding area shows. So look us up. And we also have new t-shirts for sale too, designed by Dan Kelly, with us getting attacked by a 50-foot vampire. So it's pretty cool.
That is awesome. And of course, last but not least by any means, because she's still strapped up to Geek Seat, Nicole, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys for having me. It was really great. This is my first time on, so that was wonderful. I'm wondering when you're ever going to let me out of this chair. But
nope, that's just not going to happen.
Nope, nope, nope.
I guess I'm stuck here. You can find me, me personally, on Instagram as Battle Cougar. You can find my podcast under everything Caught Dead Watching. We have a website now, caughtdeadwatching.com. We'll be rolling out a new episode soon, and that's me and Son of Celluloid, Nathan Hamilton, and it's pretty fabulous. It's all the schlock that you'd never be caught dead watching. We'll bring it to you.
That is fantastic. Thank you so, so much. You're great to have on, and you're welcome anytime back. Well, you're not going far anyway since you're still in the chair.
I know, because you won't let me out of this darn chair.
Nope.
Thank you so much. This was really wonderful.
That's how Dave started Needless Things. He finally broke out of the chair.
I'll have to hit him up for some tips.
Oh, definitely, definitely. My shout out real quick is, of course, to our other ESO Network show, the Earth Station Who podcast, because Doctor Who is back, folks. That's right. So Earth Station Who is going to be coming back to you weekly for pretty much the rest of the year. And we're going to be talking all about Jodie as the new Doctor and our thoughts, our, you know, wisdom, our hatefulness, whatever we feel all about, you know, Doctor Who, good, bad, you know, did we like it? Did we not? Please feel free to check out Earth Station Who. We don't talk about, you know, a lot of our other shows enough on this network. And, you know, we're going to be promoting even more so come in the next couple months. So please, if you're a Doctor Who fan out there, please check out Earth Station Who. And I can actually say, Dave is going to be hanging around on the station because he'll be with us tomorrow night when we record the new episode.
Two nights in a row. That is crazy.
This is crazy talk, folks. I know.
He's sleeping over. You're not the only one stuck here, Nicole.
Exactly. Thank God we have a nice sleeping bag with his name on it. There we go. Over in the corner.
Our premiere episode of the new season of Earth Station Who is going to be quite the reunion.
Oh, yes, it is.
I have words.
Uh-oh. I can't wait to hear him. So that's going to wrap it up. We will be back again next week when we are going to be coming to you from the Monsterama, which we talked all about during the con report. So we are going to be looking at Charles Adams. We did a panel there and we had some great questions and some great input. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun talking everything from his cartoons all the way to the TV series and the movies, all the way to the new animated film that's being produced. Pretty cool stuff going on with the Adams family. So please check us out next week. Looking forward to hearing from all of you out there. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Till then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace. And we are done.
Yay.
You've been listening to the Earth Station 1 podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station 1 is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.